It is well known that Celtic had strong religious influences in their early days. You can argue that another holy connection once gave the boys an important tournament victory. St Mungo is famously the patron saint of Glasgow. In the Parkhead Trophy Room is a prize in his name that the Celts won in the 1950s. This is the story of Celtic and the St Mungo Cup, one that features victories as well as arguments. Football competitions were often held as part of national exhibitions and events. Celtic had enjoyed victory in the 1938 Empire Exhibition Trophy and also reached the finals of the 1888 and 1901 Glasgow Exhibition Tournaments. In 1951, the Festival of Britain took place. This involved events and shows being held across Britain, from Bournemouth to Inverness, and numerous other locations too. In Glasgow, attractions included book and film festivals, as well as different exhibits. Another Scottish feature of this festival was a football contest organised by the Glasgow Corporation, although it contained clubs from across the country. This was named the St Mungo Cup and took place across July and August 1951, featuring 16 Scottish teams. Originally, the event was meant to be smaller and include only Glasgow sides as well as four East Coast clubs. However, the excluded teams protested and were thus made part of the competition. Celtic approached this event with great confidence. Although the 1950s are not generally considered one of the club's most successful eras, the boys had recently claimed the Scottish Cup thanks to victory over Motherwell. However, there were some concerns that the boys could be fatigued for the St Mungo Cup. Following the Hampden triumph, Celtic had gone on their second visit to North America, playing 9 games across the USA and Canada, facing teams such as Fulham and Eintracht Frankfurt. They returned to Scotland just over 2 weeks before the opening match of the St Mungo Cup. For this, Celtic were drawn to play Hearts. On the 14th of July 1951, the Edinburgh men made a westwards journey to come to Celtic Park, doing so on a very sunny day. The first half was a tight affair. Hearts thought they had taken the lead, but it was ruled out for offside. And then on 35 minutes, Jimmy Walsh put the home team ahead. In the second half, John McPhail extended this lead, with the Celts seemingly on course for round two. But then unfortunately came the third Celtic scorer of the day, and for Alex Rowlow it was not good news as he knocked into his own net. Still, Celtic did hold on to claim a 2-1 victory. In the other first round matches, 7 teams made it through to the second round. These were Aberdeen, Motherwell, Hibs, Queen of the South, Raith Rovers, St Mirren and Clyde. The first round signalled that this was going to be an exciting tournament. Warm weather and good football had attracted 171,000 fans to the 8 games, and these featured 35 goals to cheer. Raith were the big winners, beating Queen's Park 9-0, whilst Aberdeen also had high hopes of success after they defeated Rangers at Pittodrie. If Celtic had only narrowly won their first round tie, the next match proved to be an even trickier affair, one that would not be settled on the first day. On the 19th of July 1951, Celtic's opponents were their near neighbours, Clyde. However, that match took place in Glasgow's West End at the home of Partick Thistle. 29,000 people were present, and what a match they witnessed. If ever the term "fir hill for frills" was appropriate, it was for this encounter. By half-time, a double from Alec Linwood had put Clyde in control of the game and essentially 1 foot in the next round. But Celtic weren't finished. 2 quick goals from Jimmy Walsh and Bobby Collins equalised proceedings early in the second half. Except, no sooner had this happened than Clyde were again in front by 2 goals, thanks to strikes from Tommy Ring and Archie Robertson. 8 minutes remained and Celtic again needed 2 goals. And quickly. Firstly, John McPhail got the second fight back underway, and then Bobby Collins, second of the game, levelled things. There was even time for McPhail to hit the crossbar, but this game ended 4-4. The next night, it was time to go again in the replay. Fans must have hoped for a repeat of the previous entertainment, and in a way, this is what happened, for one of the teams anyway. The Celts echoed their four-goal exploits from the night before. Sean Fallon scored twice, one either side of the half-time interval, and Bertie Peacock made it 3-0. Although Clyde pulled back one, this was to be their only reason to cheer. And then a final goal from Jimmy Walsh gave Celtic a fourth and a comfortable passage to the next stage. The boys were joined in the semi-finals by Aberdeen and Hibernian, along with Raith Rovers. The Fife team had matched Celtic in needing a replay to get through. In fact, other than the Aberdeen match, all other quarter-finals, including the replay, had taken place at Celtic Park. Raith's reward for winning their tie was a trip to Hampden to face the Celts. On the 28th of July 1951, 30,000 supporters made their way to Glasgow's south side. On this occasion, there was no doubt about the identity of Celtic's star man. Jimmy Walsh struck early to give the Hoops a lead. However, for the second game running, an own goal evened up the match, as the unfortunate John McGrory scored against his own team. In the second half, Celtic stepped up a gear. Walsh grabbed his second of the day almost as soon as the second period got underway, and then in the 65th minute, he completed his hat-trick. With a 3-1 victory, Celtic would be heading back to Hampden for the final. Their opponents were Aberdeen, who overcame St Mirren by 2-1 following a replay. The first match had ended in a 1-1 draw at Celtic Park before the decisive fixture was held at Pittodrie. The St Mungo Cup final took place on the 1st of August 1951 and was a fantastic game. 80,000 fans crowded into Hampden and they were well rewarded for their attendance. Aberdeen had been going well throughout the tournament, and in the first half, they seemed destined to claim the prize. First, Harry Yorston gave them the lead, and then former Celt Tommy Bogan doubled the red advantage. For the third time in the tournament, across two games, Celtic were 2 goals behind. Going in with this deficit at halftime might have proved fatal, so thankfully they got one back before the break. Most sources say that it was Sean Fallon who scored, although some credit Charlie Tully. Now trailing by only one, Celtic fought back in the final 45 minutes. 4 minutes into this time, Celtic's second of the day was scored, and this time it was definitely Fallon who got his name on the score sheet. Back from 2 goals down, the boys went in search of a third. With 20 minutes remaining, Charlie Tully got to the byline and put in a cross. Despite claims that the ball had gone out, the referee didn't award this. Instead, Jimmy Walsh was there again to score Celtic's third goal, and the one that proved decisive in a 3-2 victory. This was a particular achievement for Walsh, who had now scored in all of Celtic's games throughout the tournament. The boys had won the St Mungo Cup, but the trophy ceremony was very different from the modern era. Rather than handing over the prize on the park, instead an awards ceremony was later held at the Kelvin Hall. 3,000 Celtic fans were in the hall to see this handover, having each paid 1 shilling and sixpence for entry. 1,500 of these were bought by one man who represented the Celtic Supporters Association. Despite the requirement for tickets to attend, there was still a busy and chaotic scene at the event. One fan refused entry, tried to break through to get to the players, and was arrested for his troubles. The trophy was handed over by Mary Wishart, the Lady Provost and wife of Glasgow's Lord Provost Victor Warren. However, now that Celtic had the trophy, the problems began. A handle fell off their prize, and it also seemed strange that the design included mermaids. A jeweller advised Celtic that it was not a new cup, and instead a second-hand prize, having begun life as a yachting trophy in the 1890s, and then being used as a Glasgow Police sports reward. The boys initially demanded a new trophy be purchased to recognise their achievement. Given the costs involved, arguments soon emerged, not least about who would pay for it. For instance, was it to be the Scottish FA or Glasgow Corporation? Eventually, Celtic backed down and agreed to keep the St Mungo competition trophy that they were given. The players at least were content with their financial rewards. The Celts received £50 each for playing 5 times in the tournament, with £10 per game being the appearance fee. The day of the trophy handover included another interesting piece of Celtic history, one that was connected to their earlier American excursion. One player they had seen on the trip was invited to Scotland for a trial, which took place before the ceremony. Jamaican-born Gil Hearn would become Celtic's first-ever black player, appearing five times across 1951 and 52, before signing for Fir Lanark for a brief period. Arguably his biggest claim to fame concerns his son, Gil Scott Hearn, who was a renowned singer and musician. Despite initial complaints about the trophy, the St Mungo Cup stands proudly in the Celtic Park trophy room. It's another important part of Celtic's story, with the boys continuing their proud record of victory in one-off competitions. To learn more about Celtic's less well-known trophy victories, you can buy a two-part book series, Green, White and Silverware by Matthew Marr, which will be released later this year. To get details, follow Hail Hail History on Twitter X and Blue Sky, or keep listening to the Celtic Underground.